Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. We will be traveling together through various important parts of the battle space of what I think of as the war for the free world. I'm delighted to have with us Ben Birnbaum in segment two. He'll be describing what's going on in Venezuela at the moment. A very promising development in terms of the opposition to Hugo Chavez coming together with a very pro-American line. We'll be watching this one closely and having an interesting chat with Ben about what it might mean for all of us. Secondly, we'll be speaking with Congressman Louis Gohmert, one of our most favorite guests here at Secure Freedom Radio, about the Eric Holder drama as it relates to Fast and Furious and more generally what the United States government is doing with respect to training and otherwise blinding ourselves to the threat posed by Sharia. We'll be visiting with Congressman Gohmert in segment three. Segment four, Gordon Chang joins us for his regular visit about what's happening in Asia. A lot developing with the Chinese at the moment, much of it having very profound security implications for our friends in the region and for us. You're not going to want to miss the conversation with Gordon in segment four. But first, I wanted to share with you some thoughts that I have been having about a very troubling article that appeared on the front page of the New York Times today. It was a transparent effort to portray the warnings that former House Speaker Newt Gingrich has been providing all of us about the danger of strategic attacks against this country utilizing electromagnetic pulse. What Speaker Gingrich has described is the possibility of a ballistic missile being used to deliver a nuclear weapon high over the United States, detonating it outside of the atmosphere, and unleashing something known as electromagnetic pulse, or EMP, an intense burst of electromagnetic energy, actually three successive pulses, that will damage very, very substantially, if not actually destroy, electrical devices and electronic systems not shielded against us. Now, Bill Broad, the journalist who wrote this piece for the New York Times, made a series of, I believe, misleading statements or simply neglected to mention some relevant data that all of us should be aware of as we try to calibrate what the speaker is telling us and what we're now hearing from some who would have you believe that it's all simply a misunderstanding or perhaps an effort to fearmonger about what is truly a non-existent or at least exaggerated threat. Well, for example, William Broad fails to mention that a blue ribbon, congressionally mandated EMP threat commission has produced a number of studies over the years confirming the reality of this ballistic missile-delivered electromagnetic pulse scenario, and warning that should it happen, the effect on this country would be, quote, catastrophic, unquote. The Times also reports, and I must say this struck me as somewhat amusing, that some of its sources who are dismissing the electromagnetic pulse threat claim that if it did exist, missile defense would be the answer. Now, I can't help but observe an irony that sources such as Philip Coyle and the Union of Concerned Scientists who feature in this piece, and for that matter, William Broad himself and his newspaper, have been relentlessly hostile to the idea of American deployments of anti-missile defenses. Now, those of us who actually support such defenses believe they can and must be part of the answer, and indeed that they would be had critics and the Obama administration not done everything possible to defund, dumb down, and otherwise constrain such systems. The Times has also purveyed the idea, this piece by Bill Broad, that even if electromagnetic pulse could be a threat, it isn't at the moment, since the nations that we might worry about are at what Bill Broad calls the, quote, kindergarten stage, unquote, of obtaining the long-range missiles and nuclear arms they would need to engage in such attacks against the United States. This meme misses a couple of key points. For one, among the nations who understand America's vulnerability to this sort of threat are Russia and China. They are certainly capable of exploiting it at any time. In addition, an enemy need not have long-range missiles to do this kind of damage to us. Short-range missiles launched off of a ship would suffice to deliver a strategic EMP attack. And virtually all the world's bad guys, including not only North Korea and Iran, but the Islamist terrorist group Hezbollah as well, have Scud missiles that could perform this mission. What is more, the Iranians have test-launched ballistic missiles off of ships and flown another, the so-called Shahab 3, in a manner that simulated a detonation at apogee. Means that they did precisely the sorts of things that they would need to do to exercise this sort of EMP attack as soon as they have a nuclear weapon that they can use to trigger the effect. These are hardly comparable to the sorts of rudimentary skills that we associate with preschoolers. Now, the prospect of relatively short-range missiles being used to mount such an EMP attack compounds the problem that arises from our having relatively modest anti-missile systems. Indeed, the ones we have may or may not be able to contend with missiles launched from the sea close to our shores. The determining factor may be where and how ready are our Aegis ships that are equipped with missile defenses on board. The West Coast deployed ground-based interceptors that most people think of when we talk about missile defense of the United States will simply be unable to do the job against short-range missiles fired off of, say, the East or Gulf coasts. Finally, the Times report ignores another particularly ominous fact. That is, even if there were no danger of what the Obama administration calls man-caused disasters involving electromagnetic pulse attacks, there is the imminent problem that Mother Nature will unleash what amounts to the same thing via cyclically occurring and intense solar flaring that is expected to occur within the next few years. The result will be to expose large swaths of the Northern Hemisphere to high levels of electromagnetic energy. Now, missile defenses obviously provide no protection against such a natural caused effect. Only hardening of our electrical grid and other critical infrastructure will prevent a similar kind of disruption and possible destruction of both, with truly catastrophic consequences for our country and its people. In short, Newt Gingrich is absolutely right, and the New York Times shamefully wrong. The EMP threat to America is real and potentially horrifically damaging. Our enemies know it and either have or are working to obtain the means to inflict such devastation. Even If they do not execute such a strike, we must be prepared to contend with a naturally occurring phenomenon that may be every bit as devastating. And if the Times mischaracterization of this danger contributes to our continued vulnerability, it will represent more than journalistic malpractice. It may help exacerbate a looming disaster. Those are my thoughts. I'd welcome yours, securefreedomradio.com or the Frank Gaffney Twitter or Facebook accounts. Next up, Ben Birnbaum on what's happening, some of it potentially quite promising, in Venezuela. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight. 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Ben Birnbaum. He is a reporter covering foreign affairs topics for the Washington Times. He has previously worked as a reporter researcher at the New Republic and has recently contributed to our understanding of what's going on in Venezuela at the moment, and I thought it would be useful to visit with him a little bit about that. Ben Birnbaum, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on, Frank.
You've recently reported about an opposition candidate to Hugo Chavez in Venezuela by the name of Pablo Perez. Tell us a bit about him and what it is that makes him seemingly such a breath of fresh air relative to what we've been experiencing under the increasingly despotic rule of Hugo Chavez there.
Sure. Let me give some brief background first, just so our listeners understand. The Venezuela is scheduled to have presidential elections next October. Chavez has said he will be running for re-election, though there are increasing doubts that he will be able to make it because he, as you know, has cancer and has been shuttling back and forth between Havana and Caracas. So leaving that aside, the opposition, which has been historically disorganized, or at least disorganized over the past decade or so, they have really united in the past 2 years, and they are going to be holding a primary in February, and all the candidates have pledged to support the eventual nominee. There are six candidates right now, and I would say two leading candidates. There is the governor of Miranda State, Enrique Capriles-Radonsky, and there's the guy I interviewed, Pablo Perez. I would say that they all have pretty similar views when it comes to foreign policy. They all, none of them have a Chavista foreign policy, if you will. And they're all sick of a Chavez giving away literally millions of dollars a day in oil revenues to countries like Cuba and Bolivia and other leftist countries in the hemisphere. And they're also not gung-ho, as Perez indicated in my interview with him, on alliances with countries like Iran and Syria.
Stark contrast, in other words, from what Hugo Chavez has been doing throughout his tenure. And I guess just to characterize a little bit more fulsomely, Ben Birnbaum, what the attitude of at least Pablo Perez and perhaps others are towards the United States most especially and its involvement in the region. I found what you reported to be really startling in terms of the hostility that we've long been told is sort of endemic in Latin America towards the gringos. Give us a sense of that.
That is true. There is endemic hostility, but the interesting thing is that historically Venezuela is actually one of the most pro-American Latin American countries. Previous governments have won that out, and that didn't disappear under Chavez. I mean, that's been sort of dormant. And actually, Zulia State, as I'm told, which is sort of the Texas of Venezuela, a real oil hub, is actually one of the most pro-American states in Venezuela.
And this is where Perez comes from.
This is where Perez comes from.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the question was.
Well, just
about
the main point that we're looking at the possibility of a really quite stark alternative to Chavez in terms of U.S.-Venezuelan ties and more generally the attitude towards supporting democratic regimes and encouraging the United States to do the same in this region should Pablo Perez come to power. Let's talk a little bit about what you see, Ben Birnbaum, as the chances that there will be an election, either with or without Hugo Chavez, in which such a course correction could perhaps be affected. Is that really in the cards? If Chavez doesn't make it, do you anticipate his cohort will allow an election to happen, or if it does, to allow it to be remotely free and fair?
It's a good question. There are a lot of variables here, and it's too early to tell completely. I would say that if there is an election, if the election is held on time and Chavez is able to run, he probably will win. I know there are different views about whether he would rig the election or not. I have people I trust on both sides of this debate. But it seems very plausible that even in a free and fair election, Chavez could win. He has gotten some sort of a sympathy bump because of his cancer. Certainly this is going to be the closest election that Venezuela has had really since Chavez was elected in 1998. So the question is, could a Chavista successor contend with one of these candidates, particularly with Perez or with Capriles-Radonsky? And I'm of the belief that in a free and fair election, one of these opposition candidates, especially if the opposition remained united, would win. The question is whether we'll have the election. And I don't know. I mean, if Chavez dies, it remains to be seen, you know, who is standing in the wings there. And I think U.S. policy here will be important in ensuring that the election is held on time and that we provide support for a democratic transition.
We're speaking again with Ben Birnbaum. He is a reporter for The Washington Times, and last week he reported on a Venezuelan candidate vowing new U.S. ties. And Ben, I guess let's just drill down on that for a moment. What is it you think U.S. policy should be about at this particular moment in time to try to help presumably not only the election take place, but also this kind of course correction, if it's in the offing, be realized?
I think, frankly, with regard to Venezuela, we need to have more of a hands-off approach because, unfortunately, just like in the Arab world, anyone we support, you know, that can end up working against them. Actually, one of the candidates in this race, interestingly enough, Maria Corina Machado, she's sort of been tarnished because she, back in 2004, I believe it was, she was the leader of the recall effort against Chavez and was invited to the White House and met with President Bush. So those photos have come back to haunt her. I don't think Obama is considered as toxic down there, but I just think there's a limit to what I don't think we want to be seen as backing the opposition per se. Yeah. I think if Chavez does die and there becomes a question about whether the election will be held on time, then that's the time when we can step in with Democratic allies in the hemisphere to ensure that it does go forward. But I think there's just a limit. We have to have some humility about what we can accomplish.
Let's turn, if we can, to what some of the other nations that are very much involved in Venezuela at the moment may be up to. The Iranians, the Chinese, the Russians, the Cubans. Do you anticipate, Ben Birnbaum, that they are having a similar hands-off attitude?
Probably not. I it's all speculation on my part, but you're correct that if there are different stakeholders, if you will, in the Chavista regime, if not Chavez himself remaining, and those include Russia, China, certainly Cuba, and some of the other leftist countries in the hemisphere.
And Iran. Don't leave that out.
And Iran, of course.
Yeah.
You know, one of the interesting things that Peres said is that he would completely, forget if I left it in the final article, but he said he would completely end any sort of nuclear cooperation with Iran. There have been reports of mining for uranium in Venezuela. You know, he said if those were true, he would completely cut off any sort of cooperation for that. So I guess we'll have to see.
Well, it certainly seems likely, given the investment that the Iranians have made, the investment that the Chinese have made, the deals that the Russians have done, as you said, the incredible generosity that Chavez has shown to his mentor, his inspiration, his perhaps the source of his continued longevity, Fidel Castro and his brother Raul.
Yes.
That these guys are going to be very, very anxious to ensure that there is no backsliding on the kind of revolutionary attitude that the Chavez regime has exhibited all this time, and more to the point that they may well redouble should a successor regime come to power. Ben, we're going to have to leave it at that. I appreciate very much you being with us. Ben Birnbaum from the Washington Times. We follow your reporting on this and other matters closely. Please keep up the good work and come back to us again very soon.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Next up, we'll be speaking with Congressman Louie Gohmert Texas about what is going on with the Holder Justice Department and much, much more. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion. Realize checks mechanism.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for Rad. This is not your normal PSA. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Let's stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Effney.
We're back, joined by a man that I personally regard as one of the most accomplished and important and valued legislators on Capitol Hill. His name is Louie Gohmert. He represents the people of Texas in the United States House, the first congressional district. And he is someone who brings to this job a wealth of experience, particularly in judicial matters. And appropriately enough, he serves on the Judiciary Committee in the House of Representatives and has been very much involved in the effort to assess what Eric Holder and the Department of Justice have been doing with respect to the Fast and Furious scandal. And I believe you were present for the interesting hearing that was held last week on the subject, Congressman Gohmert, and we're delighted to have you back to talk about it and much, much more. Welcome back.
Always good to talk to you, Frank. And I was part of the hearings and asked questions. In fact, as Attorney General Holder came into our hearing room and walked by a bunch of us, he gets by me and says, "Now be nice today for a change." And I said, "I'm always nice. What are you talking about?"
So, in your way, in your fashion.
Maybe in my way, yes, I'm always nice. But well, when you have an attorney general who on May 3rd appeared before our committee and said that he had only learned about Fast and Furious, and I quote, a few weeks before the hearing, then I questioned him on that, and Frank, he said, "Well, now it looks like probably it was a number of months earlier." He says, "I gave an order in February for an IG inspection on Fast and Furious." He said he gave an order in March that nobody else was supposed to do that again. And I pointed out that in the huge stack of documents they had dumped, which obviously was an attempt to obscure the truth, because about 100 of those pages are just Grassley's own letters asking for the documents, and then they just copied his letters over and over and over. So, I mean, that's evidence that it was a document dump and it was not serious. But nonetheless, I pointed out there's not a single email, there's not a single letter, there's not an order, there's nothing in that whole stack from him. And he does email. He's got a private email, a government email. He emails quite a bit. Well, he's got all these other emails, but nothing from him and not an order. And he says he ordered an IG inspection in February and March in order to reconcile him saying in May, May 3rd, gee, I've only known about this for a few weeks. He ended up saying last week that to him, there's nothing inconsistent about 3 weeks being 10 or 12 weeks. That's not, you know.
It's a rounding error.
Yeah, it's a rounding error. A few weeks is the same thing as 12 weeks right. to him, you know. So, now,
Congressman
Gohmert,
this, of course, all involves a matter that I think most of us are familiar with, but just to be brief.
But as you know, Frank, and from my judge days, the issue of credibility is always relevant.
Right.
And this man's credibility is front and center, and he keeps having less and less. Now, so basically to a point, were you lying about when you knew about this or your involvement in it? You won't disclose any of your emails that could prove that you, when you actually learned about it? Or are you incompetent and you have no clue about the most important things happening in your department? That's basically what we're down to now. Are you lying or are you incompetent?
Yeah.
Your choice.
It was interesting over the weekend, the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, came right out and said he thought that Eric Holder had been misleading the Congress about this matter involving gun walking, as they call it, in Mexico, some of which wound up killing our personnel there.
That's right.
Would you go that far? Has he misled the Congress?
He either has misled the Congress intentionally or negligently. Mm-hmm. And if it was negligent, it was gross negligence. But let me also mention that the thing he says now that he ordered in February, an IG inspection. I asked him, where was the order in February, as he claims now, for an IG inspection? And he said, well, he and the IG have such a good relationship, he can just pick up the phone and order such a thing. If that's true, then he needs to be fired for that. We should not have an attorney general who corrupts the inspector general process. And one of the things that Daryl Issa, who has just really been great on this, pursuing it and is not stopping, but Daryl pointed out that the IG inspector had found out that one of the gun dealers had started recording conversations with the federal agent because he was scared he was being set up. And you can understand why. When he's being told you have to sell these guns to people you believe are going to use them for crime and it shouldn't be sold guns, he started recording. And when the IG found out and got the taped conversations, instead of interrogating the federal agent based on the information she had from the tape, she turned the tape over to the federal agent, basically saying, you better review this before you answer any other questions. She was working not as an inspector general, but as an incompetent colleague of the attorney general. That's not the way that process is supposed to work. She's not supposed to help the AG department and the Justice Department prepare for an inspection from somebody who's really going to be independent.
Yeah,
so it is just from top to bottom, it stinks to high heaven. And let me remind you, Frank, that in the summer of 2007, we found out that the national security letter process, which is some of us were extremely concerned might be abused, was being abused massively. And it turned out the attorney general then under Bush did not know that it had been and told the Senate it had not been abused. and it turned out he had a report on his desk for 3 days saying it had. Within 6 weeks, we had a new attorney general. We're not seeing that here because this administration is so adept with mainstream media help at covering up, obfuscating, avoiding getting down to the truth, that they're allowed to do this kind of incompetent or potentially intentional activities that end up resulting in deaths. Unbelievable.
Deeply worrying, needless to say. Congressman Louis Gohmert is our guest. Congressman, may I just switch gears very quickly, because we only have a couple of minutes left with you, to talk about another area that I know you're very concerned about, namely the extent to which our government is submitting to what amount to one form or another of Islamist influence operations, penetration, and demands. We have today, tomorrow and Wednesday, Hillary Clinton convening a meeting at the State Department to talk about basically how to get Americans to conform to Sharia blasphemy laws. And we have your counterpart, one of your counterparts on the Senate side, Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, leading a somewhat stealthy effort to shut down the U.S. International Religious Freedom Commission. And I just wonder what your thoughts are on these two events and what we should be doing to try to prevent such submission.
Well, first of all, as I'm sure you're aware from what you're saying, we're in the process in the Department of Justice, Intelligence, State Department, and the White House of blinding ourselves. We have stripped every reference of any negative sort to Islam, the Quran, jihad. The 9/11 Commission had, you know, hundreds of references of these things, and there's zero now in the lexicon that's being used to train new agents. And as one of our administration people said privately, we are blinding ourselves in, while we're trying to fight an enemy we can't see. The new people coming in, those that are there, have been told you can't use these words like jihad. You can't quote from the Quran. And certainly all of Islam, all Muslims are not at war with the United States. But it is crazy not to recognize that people like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who constantly quotes the Quran for his basis for the 9/11 attacks and other attacks, is not moved by those things. You have to know how your enemy's thinking. You know that great quote from the movie Patton, when Patton says, after he defeats Rommel, "Rommel, you so-and-so, I read your book." Our people are not being allowed to read the book of those who are at war with us, and it is devastating. And I'm not familiar with what Durbin's doing, but if he is not standing up for religious freedom, then he is doing a profound disservice for all of the world.
Amen. Congressman Louis Gohmert, thank you very much for your comments, your leadership, and for joining us. I hope you'll come back to us very, very soon.
Anytime.
Gordon Chang on the latest from China and what it means for you. Straight ahead.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of a text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show.
Well, in the morning and out to
school. Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back as we have the privilege of being each week with Gordon Chang, our duty expert here at Secure Freedom Radio on matters involving Asia. He is also a go-to guy for Fox News. Is frequently on air, writes periodically for their website, also Forbes.com columnist and World Affairs Journal columnist. Generally a tremendous resource, and we're always grateful to have you with us. Gordon, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Several items we wanted to sort of touch on, and again, what we value so much about you, Gordon, is you're able to take kind of the news hook of the day and help us understand what its larger significance may be. Let's start with the report that the Chinese have had fishing trawlers in South Korean waters, some of which became violent when they were intercepted by the South Korean Navy recently.
Yes, we had another fatal incident where the captain of a Chinese fishing trawler stabbed two South Korean Coast Guard sailors, one of them fatally. And essentially what's going on here is that China is using its maritime fleet of its fishing trawlers and boats to try to push its territorial claims. Although it doesn't have any territorial claims against South Korea, it is using the same tactics in South Korea that it is using in Vietnam and the Philippines to try to push its South China Sea claims. This is an important story because it shows the aggressiveness of China's new tactics.
And also the sort of auxiliary nature of these fishing vessels as really sort of proxies for the Chinese
People's Liberation Army's naval units. We saw in a recent episode, Gordon Chang, as you recall, the Chinese reacting rather badly when another government, I think it was Japan in that instance, seized one of their trawlers that had engaged in similar kind of violations of their sovereign waters, which precipitated a backlash by the Chinese cutting off rare earth mineral supplies to Japan with very considerable economic impact. Do you anticipate a similar kind of thing now that the South Koreans have taken this trawler into custody?
Yeah, we don't really know what Beijing will do, but the incident you referred to, which occurred last September, was horrible because there we had a Chinese captain of a fishing boat ram at least two Japanese Coast Guard vessels. And this created this international incident, which you referred to. China then used the most predatory of its trade tactics to cut off rare earth mineral exports, not only to Japan, but later in October to the European Union and to us. This just shows the belligerence of the Chinese and the way they're willing to use all their tools in the toolbox, including their economy, to further their geopolitical aims, many of which trouble not only China's neighbors, but also the United States.
Yeah, a similar kind of thing, Gordon Chang, has just recently crossed the AP wires concerning hacking that it now seems the U.S. government is persuaded is really directly tied to the government of China, in some cases simply being supported by it, perhaps in other cases being actually directed by it. What do we know about this now, and what do you think we should be making of this aspect of Chinese conduct?
Well, there are apparently 10 major groups of hackers in China. You can't run a major hacking group, even a minor one, without the knowledge and consent of the Chinese government, because they run the most sophisticated set of internet controls, which not only prevent information from going into China, but also information leaving China. And so if you operate this major hacking operation, the Chinese government censors will know it. And essentially what we have is one less reason to believe Beijing's friends who say, oh, these are just guys in pajamas who are doing it on their own. Well, these guys are not doing it on their own. For the most part, what we are seeing are groups run by the Ministry of State Security and the People's Liberation Army to deliberately attack the cyber networks of the United States and its allies and other countries around the world, and not just defense establishments, but also civilian defense contractors and civilian networks like water and electricity. This is a very serious matter. This is what Google highlighted when it told the world that China was stealing its information. It's stealing information from the Pentagon and everybody else.
Yeah. Gordon, this may be entirely speculative at this point, but there is certainly reason to believe that the Iranians successfully commandeered a stealthy drone recently. The question that occurs to many of us is, how did they get their hands on that thing in a virtually intact condition? Obviously didn't shoot it down. I guess, again, speculation that I'd like you to indulge with me in a little bit is, might it have been as a result of the kind of hacking into defense databases and proprietary information that we now have increasing reason to believe the Chinese have been engaged in, perhaps shared with the Iranians. Alternatively, perhaps Chinese parts that we recently learned from the Senate Armed Services Committee have now found their way into quite a number of our defense systems. Could conceivably we have seen the Chinese helping their Iranian clients and oil suppliers and undertake this bit of derring do through one or the other of these means? And also, Gordon Chang, if you would, how high a premium do you think the Chinese would have on getting their hands on that drone for the purposes of reverse engineering what's on it?
Yeah, we don't have to speculate that the Iranians could not have brought down that drone on their own. So if it wasn't a malfunction, then clearly they had help. And what we know about the relationships between Tehran and Beijing is that the Chinese are going to be the number one suspects. the Chinese looked at and inspected the stealth helicopter that went down on the raid on Osama bin Laden's compound. So we shouldn't be too surprised if the Chinese are in Iran right now looking at that drone. And we got to remember that China has supplied Iran with nuclear weapons technology in the last 3 or 4 years. And this goes back for quite some time. So essentially the cooperation between Iran and China is growing, and we shouldn't be surprised if this drone ends up someplace in China in pieces.
Yeah, and the reverse engineering that which these guys excel could well produce real compromises, not only in the technology immediately applied to that drone, but perhaps in a lot of other respects as well. A very worrying development indeed. Another worrying development, and we seem to have a lot of them to chew on with you, Gordon Chang, of Forbes.com and World Affairs Journal, also the author of The Coming Collapse of China. Let's talk about something that was featured prominently, I think it was in the Washington Post a little while ago, involving students at my alma mater, Georgetown University, who, working under the direction of a professor there by the name of Phil Carber, ascertained and I think really greatly expanded our knowledge about underground tunnels on a huge scale that the Chinese have been building, apparently for the purposes of concealing a large and perhaps very much larger nuclear arsenal than we had reason to believe was there. Tell us what your take is on that and what you're hearing from the Chinese about this Georgetown University study.
This Carver study is really interesting because the Chinese may not only be hiding nuclear weapons in those tunnels, they may be hiding centrifuge facilities and what have you. You know, essentially what we know right now is that the Chinese have probably more weapons than we have estimated them to have. But in any event, no matter whether Carver is right or wrong, what he has shown is that we should not be negotiating arms control agreements with the Russians unless the Chinese are in the room, because we cannot have an agreement with Russia, because that leaves out the Chinese, who may have as many as 3,000 weapons, may only have 400, but we don't know. And when we don't know, we should not be negotiating these deals. That's a fundamental fact that we ignored when we were talking with the Russians and actually signed up a deal to limit the operational weapons that we are allowed to deploy.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I'm keen on getting into a negotiation with people whose actual inventory we don't have a clue about, let alone their willingness to comply with treaties and our ability to verify their compliance given the lengths they've gone to conceal it. But it does raise, of course, and we'll have to leave it at this, Gordon Chang, the larger question as to whether we can safely do as the Obama administration seems hell-bent on, which is to denuclearize the United States. We are likely to see the Chinese being the principal beneficiary of such folly. Gordon Chang, as always, we're delighted to have you with us. Thank you for joining us. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. We'll look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.